Mary Jane, and I'm chatting with the Shakes.
And I'm Peter Gilibert, and I sing and play guitar.
I'm Janet Houston, and I play the bass guitar.
How did everyone meet and decide to form the band?
Well, I put an ad out for a bass player for a group I was forming in the early 90s, and Janet answered it, and it turned out we knew a lot of the same people, so it was real easy to get together.
Tell her what it said.
And I said, I'm forming a band that's going to be a cross between the Herman's Hermits and the Damned. So Janet answered it, and we had a lot of mutual friends. It was real easy, and I gave her the copy of this demo, and I said, don't listen to the drum machine, just ignore it. And apparently later I found out that, good thing I said that, because the drum machine made it sound really robotic. And anyways, long story short, she could tell
it
the songs.
It sounded like just bad English sissy music. No, it was good. So I could tell the songs were good.
So yeah. That's how we founded the band.
It was a long time ago. It was 14 drummers ago.
Yes.
Wow.
14.
Yeah. 14.
We're better than Spinal Tap.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been going ever since. And we've made 3 CDs and a couple of little comps here and there, single here and there, that we really started revving up after we started all the bad behavior and we got ourselves in better condition to do what we do. Then we got a lot more done.
Yeah, we kind of like wasted the first 4 or 5 years. We had like one solid lineup for a while, but there was just all this chaos and nonsense. But we started working on our first record, which came out in like, what, 2001? Uh-huh. So I sort of count that as the beginning of the band in a way. Uh-huh. And when we met Jim and started putting records out and stuff, it was like, you know, the whole 90s thing, it almost doesn't count. It was so... Mm-hmm. Well, we were like a two-guitar band.
We just did it backwards. Like most bands do all their excessive behavior after they make a lot of money. But we decided to just go ahead and do that right away, and then we would become successful. So that
we were watching the
want to be different.
Behind the music, and we're like, yeah. You know, we got it wrong.
We couldn't be like everyone else. We had to do it our own way.
Yeah. Right.
That's what we
tell ourselves. It was all a plan. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so we kind of like got off to some false starts and stuff. So we say the band's been together for 12 years, but I don't know.
The band's been revving, yeah. Maybe you could say revving for 7.
7 or something.
Yeah.
Revving? Is that like a technical musical term that you learn in those books, those fancy music books?
I don't know. Isn't that a word? I don't know.
I'm not really sure it's a word, but anyway, go on.
Raving.
Raving.
Raving for 7 years. Raving and revving.
Schlepping feels more right.
Well, you guys have been playing together for a couple of years. How has your music changed since you first started?
Well, you could say maybe we've let our latent hippie side come through a little bit, or latent country side. We come from like the punk rock generation, but now that it's been co-opted by people who do it because it's commercial, now it's sort of become, to us, being people from that generation, being older, it's become sort of meaningless. So to be different, and we see people who are younger than us do it to be different, you know, or the younger kids with their beards and their canyon rock.
No, we're not canyon rock.
We're not canyon rock.
But I think when you get older, you have to, and also when you realize that you're not going to get rich and famous, and you start playing music more just for the sake of playing music, you play more what you like. You're not. What are you doing it for? You're not as afraid to try things. And also, you know, also you get better at what you do, and if you get an idea, you can actually pull it off a little easier. So we become more of a recording band. Like we're, you know, in the studio, you can take more chances. So we've been really lucky to mostly do it in a situation where, like, you try something and it's horrible, you just hit erase and, like, it never happened. And just, yeah, you get more confident to try new things and stuff. And also, you're like, really don't care. Like, not that we ever really cared about being, you know, hip and current and, like, what's happening, but, you know, we just really didn't care. And so I think we've gotten more original. And some bands after a while find their sound. We're a lot more our own thing. At first it was just, you know, it was a straight guitar power pop band. It was a lot of 60s garage influences and stuff. And now that we've gotten a lot better as musicians and Pete's written a lot more songs and stuff, it's just, we sound more like ourselves, less like 10,000 other bands, I think.
Yeah, the songwriting has gotten better overall, and we're more aware of other kinds of music. Yeah, so you hear all that coming through, and
we don't care if someone's like, you stupid hippies. If we have stuff that's more country now, or it was always kind of a 60s band, but it was all fast. Everything was fast and loud, and we'll have songs with harmonies now and stuff.
Our second album is sort of recorded on Red Bull, and you can kind of hear it. It's a little rushed, but the third album we stopped with the Red Bull, and we just.
Stuck with the Red Bull
more,
then, and it like blew our
more
minds.
More Perrier, less Red Bull, I guess. I don't know. But the song.
Perrier.
Songs, maybe not Perrier. That sounds kind of snobbish.
No, he actually drinks Perrier, which is just freak. I can't really come to terms with that. But yeah, no, we just relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bands get like that over time. You get stale or you get better. I think we got better. Okay. I don't know.
Maybe. Are there any genres that you're thinking about incorporating into your music in the future, or something you want to experiment with?
Yeah, we're gonna go totally hardcore gangster rap. No, I don't think there's that much thought into it, really. I mean, it's sort of
there is, but we don't consciously talk about it too much. It's sort of understood.
Mm-hmm.
I think we know that we like George Jones and Hank Williams, and we know that we like Duke Ellington or something. Or
Fats. Four Elevators.
Yeah, so it's more like a kid who eats hamburgers and then one day he realizes that sushi is okay too, and Thai food and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. we're going to naturally, because it's the only way you can keep it interesting, you know, so.
But as far as following any like current trends or what's happening and stuff, I don't think we would even know. The music's kind of in a dead spot right now, it seems to me. Like most of what's new isn't very good. I mean, there are really good local bands everywhere, but as far as, you know, what's popular on the radio, it's like in a particularly dead and depressing time. We really don't pay much attention to that kind of stuff, so we're not going to sit down and go, oh, I think like the new thing is going to be this, let's write a song like that. And I know that bands used to do stuff like that, and they probably still do. Well, you can tell they still do, but that's really not what we do.
Right.
It's like kind of, seems kind of pointless and silly. But yeah, music now, like, God, the radio is just unlistenable. It's awful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a few new bands that are popular that I like, but there's like five of them in the whole world. Mm-hmm. And everything else I like is either totally super unpopular
or
old. I like the Ravenettes. The Ravenettes are good, but I mean, really, that's like one band out of what, like 1,000?
Yeah.
I don't know what's on the radio down here.
I hear
but
some good things here and there.
Here and there, but in general,
I like.
It just sounds like mush. Like, I mostly listen to, you know, Indie 103, you know, because they play a lot of old stuff I like, but God, man, these new bands, I just want to quit whining, man. They're like, what are they? Everyone's whining, and they're all so depressed, and just wham, wham, wham. Like, I can't listen to it. It just bumps me out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all bad, but I mean, just the sort of general thing right now, it just seems to be like kind of whiny, depressing elevator music.
Right.
There's always a few good things out there.
Well, your latest album is The Rise and Fall of Modern Living. Is there a particular track on there that you guys were most proud of to have recorded?
For some reason, the song Mexican Wedding came out really good. I mean, I liked the song, but it was this weird doodle that I actually had for the first record that I'd never really finished all the lyrics for, and it's just a strange song. I didn't even know what it was about. I'm sure a musician who ever listening to this knows that sometimes you just record something and it just comes out really good and you don't really know why.
No one was hurt, but the cop had to come. Dumb, he was so loud, they had to arrest him.
That song seems to stick out, you know, and it's got some airplay in college around the country, so I guess, I don't know. I mean, that one, and the title song, there's a few that really came out really well, but that one, for some reason, sticks out. I mean, there's a Ranchero song on there that came out really well.
I'm really proud of that one. It's like in Spanish, and neither of us speak Spanish. I don't really know what it sounds like to anybody.
Yeah.
Soy un borracho, viva los nachos, no nos hablamos de rato. Mata los güeros con enchilitos, soy un chihuahua negro.
out. I just, because that's the kind of thing we never would have done before. People will be offended. They won't get it. They'll think it's weird. You know, it's just like, we'll just put it on there, you know?
Yeah, it's got nonsense lyrics. And yeah. The first song I liked too. I was happy just to do it. You know, it took us a long time. And we were wondering what, you know, what people would think of it, but it was mostly positive, the response we got.
I guess what I mean, you know, we were doing it, and it was way different than what we'd done before, and way different than what a lot of people were doing, and we're like, man, people are either going to love this or just totally hate it. But we didn't worry about it. We just were having such a good time recording it. We did it with this friend of ours named Adam Siegel, and he put so much time into it. It was just one of those things where everyone's friends, like, there's no weird egos and no one's nervous, like, you know, if the engineer's in there like glaring at you. It was just super relaxed, and so we just did exactly what we felt like we wanted to do, and it came out way better than if we worried, because there's things that we never would have put on there if we were worried about what people would think about them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally glad we did. I think it came out better than anything else we ever did. The next record, we're gonna try to do the same thing, I think.
For this last one, did you have any particular goals that you wanted to do going into it?
Because of the fact that it's a theme record and it's all about people in the neighborhood, I was especially worried that I'd get caught up so much in the concept of it and forget about the songs being good. So I made a special point that no matter what, the songs have to be good. Mm-hmm. And if that makes the theme fall apart and it ends up not being a theme record, that was fine, because I'm not like a huge, oh, I've got to do a concept record. It's got to be some, like, you know, big rock opera, but it's not at all. It's really just a song about people in the neighborhood, and there are some links of the songs linked together, but the most important thing was that the songs were good. And there were a couple of songs I didn't put on there because they were just too different. I figured if the songs were good, it would work. So I think that came through. There's a couple of them that are kind of a little bit wedged into the idea of it being a theme, a little bit shoved in there, but not too badly. So I think
it's all the songs that are about people and things in like on our block. You wouldn't really know that listening to the record, I guess, unless someone told you. We were afraid it would turn into a big in-joke, I think.
Yeah.
It didn't really.
Yeah, well, hopefully they're universal enough to where, like, you don't have to know anything about Silver Lake.
You don't have to know who the Commuter Sanborn is.
Right.
I mean, it helps.
Right.
Well, if you guys could only pick a couple of adjectives to describe the Shakes, what would they be?
Fruity.
Fruity?
Effervescent.
I don't know. Crazy?
Crazy. Jesus.
We're crazy.
Like my mom.
We're crazy. We're a little neurotic. But we're also fun. We're totally fun.
It's fun for us. It's not necessarily fun for anyone else, but it's fun for us. Mm-hmm. Apathetic. Apathetic yet enthusiastic.
People call us self-deprecating. We make fun of ourselves before anyone else can. We know we're a good band. Mm-hmm. And we don't like...
Yeah,
it's not like we think we suck. It's just that we have high standards for ourselves, so that when if we're anything less than what we think is really good,
we'll
really
dislike ego and self-promoters and healthy, happy people with lots and lots of self-esteem and confidence. And those are usually like the worst people.
We're not afraid to
walk around like, yeah, I know, we kick ass. We rule. It's just like, people like that, that's usually a sign your band is horrible.
We just want to be really good, so we're not afraid to give each other shit on stage and, you know, kind of yell at each other a little bit. If it makes it good. I mean, some of our best shows, we have these awful arguments where we scream and yell at each other and then we play really good. Not that we're looking to do that, but we're not afraid to.
We're going to make it a shtick like the Muffs used to do. They used to get in fist fights on stage. We're gonna work up to that, because people want to see it, I think. We just mess around and, like, we're the only ones in the room, usually, you know, especially if things start going, you know.
That's a very long answer what did you want, two words?
I told you, man. I'm sticking with effulgent. I don't know what it is, but it's good.
Meretricious.
Meretricious, yes. We're very meretricious.
You come up with all these words that I don't know what they mean.
I don't know what they mean either. They just sound good. We're phlegmatic. That's a word. Yeah. I don't know what it means.
Phlegmatic, it means slow.
I love phlegmatic.
And meretricious means to attract attention in a vulgar way, I think.
Yes, we are meretricious.
I don't know that many 50 Cent words. It's just one of the few ones I know.
We don't read good.
If the Shakes were to start an ad campaign, what would it be for, and what would be the slogan?
And
I
would be
every week when I send out an email for a show, I come up with one, and now I can't think of it.
It'd be some kind of whammo chip that you can put in your head to keep you from invading countries or something like that.
I'd say adult diapers.
Adult diapers?
Yeah,
Whamco hold it. Okay. The adult diaper.
Wait, see that works every time. That's how his career in advertising failed.
I don't know. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, it usually takes about 10 minutes to come up with
free
something. I know, because I do it all the time. Quality rock and roll at affordable prices. The Shakes. Yeah.
I didn't invent a little harmonica huggy that you stick
it's
on
It's called
your...
a cozy.
Oh, cozy. I did invent a little device.
You sew a sock, which you do not wash first, to your guitar strap so you can put a harmonica in it. This is Pete's invention.
The harmonica huggy.
That's our invention.
In your opinions, what is the worst hairstyle to ever invade the music industry?
It's got to be the mullet.
It had to happen in the 80s. Any haircut that appeared on any band that sold more than 100 records in the 80s. You know what? I always hated mohawks. I always thought mohawks were like the fucking ugliest.
I'm not too crazy about that Billy Ray Cyrus mullet thing.
Yeah, but that's like so hated it's almost cool. But you know what I hate is those freaking emo boy haircuts. I don't even know what you call them. They're just like...
I don't mind...
They are the new mullet.
Well, I don't mind if the guys have the spiky hair and the Keith Richards hair, but when I see them, like, they don't even like the Rolling Stones, that's when I get weirded out. Like, I get the feeling that they're more into like dance music, which is fine, but why do they have Keith Richards hair and they're into, I don't get that.
I hate almost all rock and roll haircuts now because the people that have them most of them don't listen to rock and roll. Yeah, it's in Silver Lake, it's all freaking dance clubs and all these people are lined up like they're gonna go see the Rolling Stones in 1972 and they're just listening to bad 80s dance music. Well, actually, you know what? Shaved heads. Forget everything we said. Like, there's never an excuse to shave your head unless you're actually losing your hair. It's freaking ugly. Stop it. Stop it. Or dreadlocks on white people.
There you go.
Right, what's the first thing you guys do after you finished a stage performance?
Cry.
Either we somehow celebrate in our own way, or we grumble among ourselves about what went wrong.
Like,
depending on how the show
went,
we all have our ways of dealing with it.
We walk through the crowd fishing for compliments, pretty much.
Sometimes. Sometimes.
When we had a keyboard player, we would get together and complain about the keyboard
There's a depressurization that goes through from being this person that's trying to attract all this attention to themselves to a person who's just an ordinary person again walking around, so you feel kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's a weird sense of people know more about you than you want them to know or something.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It just depends how the show went. You know, if it's a bad show, the first thing I do is try to go away somewhere, like not look at people. Mm-hmm. And one time when I was younger, I played a really bad show with a band. And there was no place to get away, so I went out on this ledge. I just didn't want to look anyone in the face because the show was so bad. And everyone thought I was trying to commit suicide, so this big crowd gathered.
Oh, no.
That was really harsh. It was at Madame Wong's. Never mind. Oh, God. Yeah, I went out on a ledge at Madame Wong's.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's either totally try to hide or else walk around trying to fish for compliments and get people to buy me, like, Red Bulls or something.
We'll walk around with our CDs sometimes and sell them.
Oh, yeah, that's... If we're feeling responsible, we'll walk around with CDs like really conspicuous.
Like a cigarette girl or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We have a box.
It works sometimes.
We have a really pathetic battered cardboard box. Like all these bands have these really slick, really pro merch tables.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a really shitty, dirty cardboard box that like been sat on. And it says the shakes and like markers and stuff.
CDs are good.
And we probably work the pity angle.
All right, well, you said you guys had a keyboard player?
We did.
Bad.
What made you decide to drop that?
Well, we didn't. He decided to move on to other things. So we said, okay. We're still friends with him. He just decided, you know, he needed to do other stuff. And so we said, okay, see you, Dan. So now we're a three piece.
He saw something shiny on the ground and wandered away. I mean, seriously, that's essentially what happened.
Yeah.
But he's just a friend of ours who started playing with us because he was our friend. And then he just got caught up in doing all this other stuff. And join these other bands, and now I think they all broke up. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
He didn't get to be in on the recording and stuff as much. I think he just kind of felt bored or something. It was good with him. It's good without him. It doesn't matter. We're looking for other people, kind of, but if we find the right people. Otherwise, we'll just proceed as a three-piece. Yeah, like, band members are rough. You have to be... It's almost like a relationship and a business partnership and a family. It's a pretty intense thing, and if you had the wrong people, we've had the wrong people in the past, and I think it held us back.
You have to be able to have an okay argument with someone all the time. You can't survive if you don't have arguments, but you have to have the kind of arguments that are okay.
You have to be able to talk to people
like without, you know,
without people taking things personally and stuff. And you can't have ego battles. And, and we've for some reason, we've attracted people who would, like, our keyboard player was like this too, our recent one. Who would just, they show up at a show and they would just dress in the most embarrassing way possible, like on purpose. We've had like three or four people who would do this. Like we actually had a really good show one summer at this festival in Silver Lake, and our guitar player showed up with these green polyester shorts, which he
I thought they were great.
All the way to his like his man boobs and he did that okay. And he was just doing it just to be annoying and stuff, but like
it was funny
though. Sometimes that kind of stuff hasn't helped us. Another keyboard player showed up once basically dressed as a hobbit.
Oh yeah, that was a bit much.
He was just doing it to be an ass, and another time he showed up dressed as a cowboy.
Yeah, a huge cowboy hat.
He was just a kid.
That was just
being obnoxious, but I think it's managed to confuse people and stuff. Like, what the hell is this band? And one time when Arthur Kane died, our keyboard player played a show. He just showed up in drag, like as his tribute to Arthur Kane.
Oh yeah.
And people were playing in front of all these people who've never seen us before, and they're just looking at us like, what the hell is this? So we've had stuff like that a lot too, not just with the clothes, but yeah. We've had maybe people who misrepresented their experience a little bit, and then you start playing gigs with them and you realize that they've been playing for like 3 months or something, and it's not going to get any better. They're not just rusty, they actually can't play. We've been really lucky to have killer drummers most of the time, but we've had a couple that just stunk. We had a lot of false starts and stuff, but we've had a pretty good run of luck the last few years with people.
Well, how does being from Silver Lake in the Los Angeles area influence the music you guys write?
Only in the sense that the last record was inspired by so-called ethnic neighborhood invaded by
yuppies
and like what happens in every city because it's cheap to move there. The boho types move there, the artistic types move there, and then they get followed by people who see property values going up because it becomes hip and cool, or someone in a magazine writes about it. Next thing you know, the rent has gone up sky high and property values shoot up, which is good for some people, but for others who originally moved there, they kind of have to move on. And that's what our song Gentrification Blues is about.
With the people on the streets, but to you there's someone in the way, making all the money that she can today. Got a gentrification blues, oh yeah, I guess I'm in a mood. Well no, I gotta stay one step ahead of you.
So it's sort of a humorous take on that whole circular.
I don't think it's funny at all.
Well,
yeah, the whole record's kind of about how Silver Lake used to be a super fun place to live, and now it's just everything that made it special.
It's become a bit of a tourist trap.
You
know, it's good for me in one sense. I have rent control and I can walk outside and not get mugged. But on the other hand, becoming like Brentwood, which is there's already a Brentwood.
Don't want to live in Brentwood. Never move to Silver Lake to get away from people that wanted to live in Brentwood, and then all the things that people moved to Silver Lake to get away from just followed right along. It's changed a lot.
But it's been a good inspiration. Yeah, I mean, people write about the Silver Lake music scene. I don't really know what they're talking about, but we don't hang around with like writers for spin or something to let them know what they think is going on. But they're only going to know what people tell them anyways.
There used to be quite a thriving little like music and party scene.
Yeah.
And part of it is just that we got older and like don't want to go out and get drunk on a Wednesday night and stuff, but a lot of the original bands kind of drift away, but like the new ones seem to have gone there like as a career move. I could be totally wrong about that, but it's harder for musicians to live there now. It's just expensive. It's more like trust fund kids, trust fund party trash kids, more than somebody looking for a real affordable cool place to live. It still is a pretty neat little neighborhood, but yeah, I mean, our block used to have a record store and Xene from X owned this really cool, like, junk shop kind of place. And there was a bookstore and just all this stuff that people like us could go and hang out and actually buy stuff. And now it's all upscale cafes and antique shops.
Mm-hmm.
All the places I mentioned are gone. Like, the thrift store is gone. And you see the Hilton chicks walking down the street on a Saturday, and it's just like, those people, like, 10 years ago would have been terrified there.
Yeah,
I feel that the local criminals have let us down by not just killing these people on sight.
It's lost a lot of its funkiness, it's too bad, but
yeah,
that's what happens.
Gentrification bad, boo.
Did video kill the radio star?
Yeah. Like, I thought that was a joke when that first song came out. Those people were psychics. I mean, MTV, like...
But Elvis wouldn't have been popular if he wasn't good looking. He wouldn't have been half as popular. So it was already there. I mean, image was always important. But then, unfortunately, I think it did overshadow the music by the time it came on, as evidenced by the Madonnas of the world. But oh well. I mean, I don't know if they even show videos on MTV anymore, do they?
I think music got a lot worse, and like everything good that's happened in the last 20, 30 years was pretty underground. The 80s were awful. Like, everything that was popular in the 80s was absolutely horrible. And then all the good stuff in the 90s was stuff that started in the 80s but was really unpopular and finally broke through for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's all like, who's got the grooviest haircut? And it's still like, it's like that in Silver Lake, the local scene. It's like, who's got the grooviest haircut? Who's got the eating disorder, you know, so they can wear the bitchin' clothes? I'm sorry, that's not what makes good music. Like, fashion models do not rock. You can't... I mean, I don't know. It's fashion's always been part of rock and roll, but now it's just taken over to a really gross.
Nothing wrong with
extent.
Looking good. The Sex Pistols looked good. They knew what they were doing.
Do you think a band with Pete Townsend in it now would ever get popular?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't know.
The record company would make him have a nose job.
I don't know. Yeah.
It has gone too far. The fashion thing has gone way too far. I can name like 50 bands that really they have record deals because they're skinny and have good haircuts. I'm sorry, man. That is not what makes good music.
There's bands that look good and sound good. The Strokes, you know, a lot of people will go, oh, they suck because they're popular or whatever. Like,
well, they're an okay band, but...
They're not awful.
I'm talking more of like...
That's what I'm trying to say. It's like there's bands that look good, but they're...
Yeah.
You can tell by looking at them that that's more about the image than the music. And
well, sometimes people can just surprise you. We played a show at Al's Bar like years ago with this band that came out and they had little matching clothes and a little peppermint thing on the drum set, and the drummer had like little pigtails. I'm like, this is gonna be awful. And they like were amazing. It was like the White Stripes. Like, I never seen them or heard of them before. But like, I saw them, just the fact that they had an image, things have gotten so bad that I automatically assumed they would be horrible. But like, they were a total exception. But in general, if I see a band and they look really good, like they put a lot of time and effort into their clothes and hair, I'm gonna assume they're pretty stinky unless they prove otherwise. It's because I've seen so much of that. It's not like I'm going to assume a band is great if they're wearing, like, dirty sweatpants and haven't taken showers and stuff, but you're rolling your eyes.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't fault bands for looking good. People are only human. They're only going to, like, they see a band that comes out, walks on stage, and looks really great. They're going to naturally want to stick around and watch and listen to them. But when they're really bad, they're really, really bad, they look great and really bad. If it's a girl band and guys are still standing around going, oh, they're so good because they look good, and, you know. Mm-hmm. That's just like one of those things. That's just life, you know what I mean? Like, you can't get jealous about that.
There's no point in getting jealous of that, you know? I'm like a music fan, and I want to see good music when I see like awful bands being rewarded time after time.
Well, I mean, look at the Rolling Stones. Those guys are ugly as sin.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen now. See, they wouldn't get anywhere now.
Whether or not you're huge or not, if you're really good, you'll find your audience and like you, you know.
If you're lucky.
They're not going to like... get too bummed out on you not looking so perfect. You know?
I don't know. It is a sore subject for me. Because I mean, I've seen bands that I thought were like really mediocre, but they looked great. And the next thing I know, they're huge. And then I'll see a band that like, these guys are going to change the world. They're just amazing. And they like, nothing ever happens. And it's getting ridiculous. And then I think about MTV. I think about some of the stuff that was on MTV in the 80s. Like, I'm way more militant about it than he is. And stuff. It makes me not want to dress up. It makes me not want to get a haircut. Because I'm just like so... just repulsed by seeing this happen over and over again, and like I say, now it's worse than ever. I mean, the haircut bands.
But the ones that sound good, they always win in the end, though, because those ones weren't remembered. So
making a good record is more important.
There's no point in getting too upset about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's plenty of points. See, that's where we disagree.
Who cares?
I care.
Nah, you can't. There's no point. It's just make yourself angry.
No, I think if something sucks, you should stand up and say this. This sucks, because like, people are way too accepting of...
You're not going to talk people out of that, though.
Yeah, but you can mock them until they, like, stop, you know, saying it out loud. I don't know. It's a problem.
Well, what's coming up next for you guys? You mentioned another record. Do you have a schedule for that, or a release date? Recording date?
No, we have the songs, though, pretty much. Probably 80 or 90% of them written.
Wow.
We have an idea how to present the songs. We have some people in mind to record it.
We're going to do that again, right?
I think so.
As soon as we can, we're going to start recording with our friend Adam, hopefully, who we did the last one with. And
hopefully this
and
summer.
And just, it'll probably take about a year. And then, and someday we would like to tour, but we need to kind of win the lottery first or something.
We're going to try to play New York this summer. And we have one or two songs, new songs, that we're going to play tonight that aren't on the record, that are going to be on the next record probably.
It's the same old crap. Play some shows, record some songs.
Yep.
Well, I always end my interviews with the same couple of questions for all my musicians. Do you guys have any slang terms that you overuse?
Brotard. Janet
Brotard.
Uses that. She uses that
hey,
term.
Bro. Hey, brah.
She uses that term, slang terms.
You know, the giant trucks and wallet chains.
I don't know what slang terms.
And gang tattoos on white people.
There's this genre of music that I call robe rock, R-O-B-E, and it's just all these gospely white bands that have coming out in Silver Lake now. There's a group that I really like called they're called Bodies of Water, and they're these, I don't know what they are, but it's a four-part harmonies. It's really beautiful in one way, but it's also, there's something
completely crazy. They're like if they gave the People's Temple
house
band. There's
something slightly strange about them that kind of creeps me out, but I call it robe rock because it's the kind of music you would wear a robe while you sang, like a Godspell kind of thing, or you would listen to in a robe. Maybe it's just long flowing gown, you know. There's a lot of girls up there in LA that are into the canyon rock kind of thing going on now, and I call them the macrame mafia. There's just this group of girls that walk around with these long dresses. They go to parties in long dresses.
I went to a party and like it was all these people there who were maybe 19 and they were dressed like they were going to see Led Zeppelin in 1972. It was so confusing. I used to hate Led Zeppelin because I was a punk rocker and Led Zeppelin fans gave us the most shit, but like I hate modern music
I'm going to go
repurchase all my Zepp albums. It's sad.
They rock.
Yeah, I have a love-hate thing with them. Like, if you were a kid into punk rock in the late 70s, the Led Zeppelin fans were the ones throwing, like, bottles at you.
It's because all the Rod Stewart fans were too scared to do that.
Yeah, Rod Stewart fans.
The Peter Frampton fans, the ones that really wanted to throw things at you, but they were too scared.
No one was afraid of
they
the Peter Frampton
fans.
They weren't tough enough. The Zeppelin and Sabbath fans were the ones you had to really worry about. But now it's like rock and roll has shrunk so much as far as the general public listens to it. Like, it's been dwarfed by so many other things that rock fans are sort of pulling together more. I noticed that, like, we're friends now with people that we would have been literally fist fighting with in high school, but now we're all buddies because at least we all like rock and roll. We have a friend who's fully into Thin Lizzy and Grand Funk and stuff, and is like, I fucking hate The Clash. I know he used to pick on the punk rockers in his school. Like, I know this for a fact. But now we're all friends because at least we like rock and roll. We have something in common. It's like, because fewer and fewer, I think rock and roll is definitely a lot smaller than it used to be. It used to be everybody was into it at a certain age.
What's your drink of choice?
Well, I don't drink anymore.
Tell her what you order at the bar, man.
What do I order at the bar? What do you mean? I
always drink Shirley Temple's.
Yeah. I mean, I don't drink anymore, so my drink of choice is caffeine. It kind of got bad for a while. I was drinking Red Bulls and going to sleep.
He stole a case of Red Bull that was for the whole
steal
band.
A case of Red Bull.
And he took
given
it home
to me.
And he drank it and he was up for 3 days and he lies about it.
No, it was given to me by a friend.
It was given to the band.
I don't remember.
Friend.
I was in a blackout.
He stole it.
Soda and lime. Club soda and lime is my name. What's your favorite drink?
Anything with coffee, yeah.
She's
coffee good freak. Coffee, like Vietnamese coffee.
We're the new descendants.
Yeah, we don't drink. Yeah, I used to go to high school with those guys, and they used to have this thing where they'd fill a cup up with instant coffee, like 3 inches of instant coffee, an inch of water, and like an inch of sugar, and they would actually ingest this.
I've seen their cup, and it's scary.
They actually had a little promo thing with the lines on it where the stuff, you know, put the coffee up here, put the sugar up here.
Yeah,
they did that. When we like stopped drinking and stuff, we went through a phase where we were like pretty much like that. But now it's just, I like Vietnamese coffee.
And how do you guys feel about eyeliner?
I don't really have a feeling about eyeliner. I mean, if you want to wear it, fine. Mm-hmm. If not, that's okay.
Look at it, one of those things, like it's kind of a chore. Like if we go out, I put on a little bit of makeup, but it's this part of my thing where I'm just so annoyed with the fashion thing that I kind of just not into it anymore. Plus, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, I buy one of those little pencils every couple of years. It's like, what, like $50 or something? No, eyeliner is expensive and annoying. Makeup in general is expensive and annoying. But, you know, I only wear it when I like have to because it just looks weird.
Looks good on Alice Cooper.
Yeah, if I was Alice Cooper, I would be okay with it.
And
if
Keith Richards.
Or Christine Hines.
It looks
or something,
good on Keith Richards and Alice Cooper.
Yeah, I can't do that shit.
Well, I really love this quote on your MySpace page, so I'm just wondering, do the Shakes really think everyone is stupid?
We played a show at the Knitting Factory with this band. I guess they were some big deal. Imogene Heap, this chick who's a big deal now, who's her band. And we had to share a dressing room with them, and it was like 5 feet by 5 feet. They were really kind of snotty to us, like, ew, who are these people? And we had this kind of nerdy drummer at the time, and she comes in the room, and he's like, hi, how you doing? And she's like, she literally put her nose in the air and went, humph! So, like, we wrote all over the dressing room, the Shakes think you're stupid, so, like, wherever they would look, they would see that. And then we thought, like, that's a good slogan. But yeah, it's written, it's probably still there. It's on the ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
It's by the mirror.
I barely remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, she went, poof! Like a snotty girl in a Disney movie. Like,
yeah.
It was rad.
Yeah.
I mean, I would do the same thing if that guy talked to me, but...
I guess we're the meanest pop band in the world.
Yeah, they were totally...
That's kind of how we ended up.
They showed up with crates of guitar cables and no guitars, and we're just like, why are we in the same building with these people? They brought computers and cables. No, I vote absolute no. If you cannot pick up a guitar and at least play Louie Louie, like, no. It's just fuck off. Boom. But that's where it came from, and I've sort of used it ever since. We were going to call a record that, but it was suggested that
we're thinking of calling our next record, duh.
Pete's thinking of calling the next record Dad.
Yeah, it'll be like my own version.
Well, do you guys have anything you'd like to say to your fans or someone who's listening?
Buy our CD, enjoy it, and give it to a friend for free. Make lots of copies.
Stick it to the man. Often. Whenever possible. Don't go to work. Call in sick. That's the best. Death to the fascist insect who preys upon the life of the people. I've sort of adopted that as my personal slogan. I use it for everything. The SLA were like, they were really shitty revolutionaries, but they had a really good logo and a really good slogan. Just a guy emerges from the bushes that you didn't see.